Hello and welcome to episode 211, I think, of Checkpoint Chat. Welcome to 2023, a whole 21 days late.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. It's only been 3 weeks. My name is Alessandro Barbosa. I'm joined by a bearded Matthew. Geez, a very bearded Matthew Figuera.
I went back to our last episode because I was like, I didn't grow this beard in the last month. I started growing it in October. I had a beard in December, but it's clearly just gone thicker in the last month.
Yes. I remember because you had the beginnings of it when you did the Bob Ross Halloween thing, which was great. Mm. And then you're just like, I recall you saying like, oh, I'm just going to give this a go.
Mm.
But I don't know if it's because I haven't seen you in a long time, but
no,
boy,
it got thick. It's funny because I've had beards before and everyone's been like, nah. But now everyone who sees me who hasn't seen me, they're like, oh my God, like the beard, it's looking good. I'm like, okay, like what changed? And the difference is now I have the moustache because I always shave it off.
It's got that connection. Yeah, it's got that connection.
Because trust me, if I don't have the beard, I've got a pedo moustache. So I always just shave it off. But now Lenski's like, no, just grow it.
But then you just have like the chin...
Yeah.
Beard thing, which is many people pull that off. But yeah, I think the moustache and the little goatee.
This is so annoying.
Yeah. I respect you, man. I tried because everyone said, oh, if you want to grow a beard, you have to just give it a go for like a good 2-3 months.
You have to commit.
And I think I only did like 6 or 7 weeks and I was like, fuck this. This is so irritating. No.
No, and you know what? Yeah. There's a period where it's just itchy. It is the worst.
Yeah.
But if you get over that period, it's fun and it's all good.
Do you do anything special? Have you bought beard oils?
No.
Have you subscribed to that?
No.
Beard shampoo?
Manscaped.
Manscaped. We should get them as a sponsor now. But that's for a different sort of beard. That's not for...
I don't know if that's called a beard. But
well, listen. I'm calling it now.
That's hilarious.
Nah, but it's good to be back. It's been I think we both had very good Decembers, very different Decembers.
Mm.
I obviously went abroad to Italy, so I got to see all the buildings that Ezio jumped off of. Was great. Didn't see any hay bales, so yeah. I didn't try them. Yeah, I didn't try it, you know. Florence was especially interesting for that because it was literally this whiplash. Like I haven't played Assassin's Creed 2 in a very long time.
Yeah.
But I have like memories of it. So like you'd walk into like one of the main squares and I'd be like, oh, I remember like you kill someone. And Shawnee's like, wait, what? And I'm like, wait, hold no. Okay, no, it's in a video game. It's relax.
Yeah. We.
I even looked up a video like places in Florence in Assassin's Creed. And then I was like, oh, we should go there. We should go there. Yeah, it was quite fun.
We've had semi-related to that. I mean, we're a gaming team. Well, a team working on a gaming brand at the office. So we often talk about games. And every now and then, someone will pause and be like, if anyone heard what we're saying without the context, they'd be so confused. Because it is. We talk about a game like, oh yeah, like kill this person, go visit this place, do that. Like what?
I demolished this boss.
Yeah,
I got
this
sick blood sword.
Your boss walks in like, what?
What? Excuse me?
Are you fired? Get out of here.
Step into my office, please.
Yeah. They'd be like, yes, I can demolish you.
So it was a good time. It was a nice holiday without video games as well. I didn't take any gaming devices. I ended up reading a lot.
That's good. Though.
You know, in like evenings, got into bed and I'd like read quite a bit. So I finished I finished a book by Neil Gaiman, writer of Sandman and American Gods and a bunch of other good novels. But he has a book called Norse Mythology. It's his interpretation.
I actually want to read
very
it.
Old one.
Yeah.
It's really good. Like reading it, because at the time when I'd left, I pretty much just kind of wrapped up God of War Ragnarok. And so then reading that was an interesting like chaser because like it shows you how different how different the interpretation of Norse mythology is in God of War.
Mm.
Like how actually very tame it is
it
compared
is very
to
tame, I think,
what
yeah.
it actually is. Like the real stories are fucked up. Like holy
but
shit.
It's the same with Greek mythology. I mean, God of War, like, yeah, the original God of Wars were brutal and whatever, but I think they skip over a lot of those small details.
Yes, absolutely. Like, they skip over the more brutal aspects of each one. Yeah,
even
which is
kind of
insane to think of for a God of War game. Like,
yeah, but even if you think of Disney's Hercules movie, you watch it, it's so kid friendly. Like, oh, Zeus is Hercules' father, and oh, he's trying to get to Mount Olympus. Like, what a lovely
Zeus
story.
Zeus is an asshole.
You're like, yeah, then you read up, you're like, oh my God, Zeus, like. Yeah, he's a dick.
he's a complete dick. He will kill anyone. He doesn't care. But I highly recommend reading it. It's interesting, like, detaching yourself from, like, game characters that you see, because, like, obviously, you know, in God of War, like, the game Loki is a very different character to what Loki is in God of War. And, like, even his heritage is very different.
Yeah.
Like, Loki is kind of like a blood brother to Odin. And it's like, okay, that's not even close to the fact. And like the big world serpent and Fenrir and
all those peeps.
Hel, the bird?
Oh, yeah.
Are all Loki's children.
What?
Yeah, exactly. Like things like that. Like it's. But then you look at events from the game and you're like, oh, I see how they kind of like
they
took aspects of that and kind of put a spin. Like it's very interesting. So yeah, I would thoroughly like recommend it because it's like, it's written like these almost like bedtime stories, or very disturbing bedtime stories. So each chapter is each chapter is like a self-contained story that kind of adds to a greater mythos, and it's all building up to Ragnarok.
That's cool.
So it's a good time. There were some good chapters in there with like some of the tales of Thor, and it's cool.
Nice.
There's one thing that Marvel and both the game don't do. Thor's hammer can apparently change size. He can like throw it at someone and then just make it go big, which that's amazing.
They just skipped out that detail.
Imagine if like he threw a hammer at Kratos that was the size of like the Empire State Building. Like it'd be over for Kratos. Like game over.
He'd just be dead.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now I understand how he kills giants.
God of War Ragnarok would be the shortest game with the very unexpected ending.
You just fight Thor
like,
at the beginning
of the
game.
Thor's hammer can change stars in our world. Damn. Shit.
That was a good time. I've got the book, so I can drop it off at you sometime.
Nice. Oh, you got the actual book.
Yeah, nice. We did like a Secret Santa thing at work and... Like I put that on my list and they actually got that for me. And I was like, I'm very surprised by this. So this was great. Yeah.
Nice.
It's a good time. And it's short. It's like 200 pages. So
That's perfect. Yeah. I need to.
Yeah. Perfect. Perfect thing. Yeah. So on the trains traveling in Italy, I was just reading as we were traveling and like I finished it very,
Switch
very quickly.
Peeping from home, like, remember me?
Yeah. Remember me. I was tempted. I actually had the Steam Deck in my bag and then I looked at it and I was like, this is stupid. Look how big this thing is. Like, why am I? No.
Why did
I
even bring this thing?
Yeah. I was just like, nah, I'm not going to do this. Like, let's not. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
How was your December break?
It was very different to yours. I was in Joburg, which is the...
Also very good
during
December.
The best place to be in December. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're not traveling the world and you're stuck in South Africa, come to Joburg. Because the rest of the country goes to not Joburg. It's like a ghost town. Roads are quiet. It's the best. I love it.
It seemed especially so this year. I kept seeing people being like, I've been to Cape Town in December, but Cape Town this year is bad.
I think because this time last year, we were still, at the time the year before, we were in the middle of like another COVID wave and traveling was still iffy. I think this year it was like no restrictions. It's back to normal. So a lot of people who didn't travel, I think they were like, yeah, we're gonna go all out.
They saved up. Yeah. Yeah. Cape Town seemed like a complete shit show. I'm very sorry to everyone living there. But like, I mean, I go to Cape Town in December usually and it's packed and it's bad. But man, it seemed way worse this year. So Joburg must have been a blessing. Like,
bliss. Yeah,
Joburg Decembers are really nice. I do enjoy them.
I do
too,
like them.
So.
Yeah.
But then you ended up going to Cape Town this week or?
Yeah, went last weekend for a wedding. Going in 2 weeks again for a 60th. And then in March
keeping
for another
afloat,
wedding.
Jesus.
Listen, we went with Lyft. Have you ever flown Lyft before?
I flew Lyft. The last time we went to Cape Town in September for a wedding, we flew Lyft.
They
very
are
happy with them.
Really good, yeah.
Yeah. I had a very good experience with them. Much better than all of my FlySafair ones. So, yeah. I've just seen, because it's basically them two now. Like the prices are just astronomical. Like I knew someone at work who paid like $5,000 for a flight to Cape Town in December. And I was like,
I know someone who paid $6,000.
Oh my God.
It's
bordering on the price I paid to get to Italy. Exactly. Like it's insanity.
Yeah.
Like
for a two-hour flight, that's
you. No, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Yeah. Jeez. Yeah, I wouldn't do that. Like if I got to December and the flight was that bad, I'd just be like, well, I guess I'm not going.
I guess we're staying in Joburg.
Yeah, no, fuck that. I'm not paying. Imagine paying like for two people, like $12,000 to get to Cape Town.
That's what he paid. No ways. And his wife. I was like, okay.
That's a lot. Like, you can do what the hell you want, but I refuse to do something like that. Yeah, that's insane to me.
So Cape Town's going to be seeing a lot of me.
You said you're going in March. I'm going in April for a wedding as well. So yeah,
good.
It's going to be scheduling our podcast is going to be real fun.
Yeah, there might be some holes in the podcast this year. So just going to apologize in advance because
unless we get a powerful laptop to help us.
Forget the travel plans between load shedding. Well, with load shedding bouncing between Stage 4 and 6 nights, and it's one of those things where our schedules don't line up neatly. Yeah. So the fact that we have this gap is like a miracle.
The benefit now is that at least one of us. Well, I got an EcoFlow thingy, like inverter thing, works super well. Very happy. So like, if there happens to be the chance where you don't have load shedding in the morning and I do, we can still
make a plan. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I think it's better than last year. For that purpose that you've got, that one of us can at least power. But like worst comes to worst, I just need to make a plan. Maybe I don't know, use Lenska's laptop.
Fans of the show, tweet EcoFlow to get Matty. Listen, we emailed them. We asked. We said,
please.
We need a sponsor and load shedding.
Yeah.
This would be perfect.
And EcoFlow went, literally everyone has asked us because of load shedding.
Yeah.
And I'll say to them, but how many gaming podcasts have reached out to you? Okay.
Probably many.
I mean, come on.
I mean, I'm very happy with mine, but I also acknowledge that it cost. I couldn't put up with it anymore. Like when it started becoming like 4 hours twice a day, I was like, fuck this. I'm just going to spend the money. And hey, it works. Like I connected it to my TV and my consoles and it works. Works really nicely. So happy with it. But very sad that I had to pay that much money.
How big is yours in terms of capacity?
730 something watt hours.
Okay, so it'll give you
the largest one that they have. That's not like the trolley, you know, because they have the trolleys.
Does it have pass through, like power pass through?
Yes, that's what I primarily love.
But that's amazing because that makes it like technically a UPS, but it's not.
It is a UPS.
Is it a UPS? Okay,
yeah.
Because a lot of UPSs, it's a thing of like they exist just to give you enough time
to switch over. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So this one acts as a UPS. It's got like, they say on the spec sheet, 30 milliseconds of delay when switching over. And in my experience, that's low enough that the console doesn't turn off, the TV doesn't turn off. So I don't lose any.
It flickers for like, the console's like,
yeah. Oh my God, what did you do? Yeah.
I'm back.
But it's great. I've seen some conflicting reports on whether or not you should use it as a UPS, you know, as a pass through thing. But if it's got that
functionality, why wouldn't you use it?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
I don't know.
What's cool is that the app allows me to turn off its output remotely. So if I'm at work and I'm like, oh, there's going to be load shedding, but no one's home, so I don't want it like
to waste the battery
charging my TV on standby, I can just turn it off. And that's it'll be like my TV will just turn off, like everything will turn off. So yeah, I just need to fix some things around because I made a mistake the other day not thinking that I have a baby UPS or a baby backup pass supply for my internet, but that's connected to the inverter. So I was like, oh, I'll just turn off the plugs. And I did that. And then when I got home, there was no internet because that basically my internet was being charged off this thing for the whole day and it died. And I was like, oh, oops, my bad. Like, and then I got home to load shedding, so I had no internet. So I was this was a mistake. But that's my fault. That's not the device's fault.
Red like the... Our ancestors by candlelight.
Like our ancestors, yes. But yeah, it's a good little device. But
nice.
Yeah, get Matty one. EcoFlow, if South Africa, if you're listening, he needs one.
I'll shave my beard if it gets me one. Bjelica first.
That's so enticing. Damn. He'll let Lenska wax his beard.
Oh my God.
That's what I heard.
Sure. That must be so
sounds fucking awful. I would not want to do that.
No thanks.
Checkpoint chat, talking about video games and waxing hair. Well, I mean, Matty used to wax hair on stream, so we're not
Wow. Yeah, I played a lot of games over December, and you played some before you went away. So we've got a bunch to talk about, which I think we're gonna fly through at a relatively breakneck pace.
So
kick us off with whatever you've been playing. You can choose. What do you want to go with first?
Let me go quickly with Signalis.
Nice.
Signalis, however you want to say it. Because it's something I mentioned in our like Game of the Year stuff, because I was like kind of done with it. And then I actually thought I was done with it, and then I realized that I'd only played like 2/3 of it. It's very funny. So if you missed us talking about it previously, Signalis is an indie game made by two people, which is kind of insane to me. It very much is a homage to like Resident Evil and Silent Hill. Resident Evil more in terms of gameplay, Silent Hill more in terms of tone and just really strange story.
And enemies.
And enemies, yeah. Enemies that just scream at you whenever they get near you. It's very off-putting. You play as like an android on a... on a planet, on a ship, I don't know. It's very, again, it jumps between areas very strangely in a bit to like not let you ever feel settled as to where you are or what's going on, and it's very effective in that. And it's got all the like sort of staples of a Resident Evil, like you've got to get items and combine items to solve puzzles, and you've got to solve puzzles in a certain order so that they open certain doors, and that's how you progress through things. You've got limited ammunition. You've got things like flares, which can permanently destroy some enemies. So you've got to be strategic in how you use those, like which hallways are you walking through most often. So I want to deal with those ones first, you know? And I think it's a really good game. I think its later levels, especially like probably the last or the second last one, become way too enemy heavy.
It just becomes very confusing.
Yeah, it's super confusing. I think like for the most part you have a map, and then like in one of the later levels it's just like, no, you don't have a map anymore. And I'm like, well, this is stupid. Like, and on top of it, like you don't have a map and the level is multi-level, so there's three floors.
They shift perspective. You'll exit the screen, like you'll walk to the right and you pop up like on the right on the next screen, if that makes sense. It flips and it just throws your sense of like direction.
Where did you come from and where are you actually going? It's very confusing. And again, I think that's purposeful, but I think when you combine that with rooms that are filled with like, you know, in the beginning, they're like one or two enemies here or there. But then you get to some rooms where there's just like six enemies and you're like, how the fuck am I meant to get past all of these things? Like, so it becomes, I think, slightly frustrating in like its later levels, but I still really enjoyed it. I still have no fucking clue what the story's about.
I've done some reading, and it's one of those things where there's no like definitive story. There's just a lot of speculation or assumptions or like, you know, but like, like a From game, you know, Bloodborne, you have a sort of idea what the thread of the story is, but a lot of people go like, oh, but this person's story is this or that, whatever, like depending on how you interpret it. So I've seen a lot of people going like, is this all a dream? Is it actually happening? Like what's going on here? The story, a lot of it in terms of actual narrative went over my head, but in terms of setting and stuff, like very interesting, you know, what this colony is doing on this planet, how this colony is set up structurally. Like you've got, I can't think of the names at the top of my head now, but people who work on this thing or they've got this role, whatever, and that's what they do, you know?
These sort of like window dressing of why have some of these like androids gone insane and why are they like essentially like decaying? And I think it's a very strong world, and the story is just, like you said, I don't think it's bad that I don't really know what's going on. Like there are certain beats that I think were very interesting, like, depending on the endings that you get, like eventually you find the character you've been looking for forever, or you keep running into this like antagonist who keeps alluding to your choices, your recursive choices, because you meet him in the same place multiple times, like actually being destructive. And it's like, I don't know what that means, but it feels like
this is some good shit.
Yeah. And there's, I think it just works like from a setting perspective, visually, and the audio as well is very like arresting. So yeah, there's a lot of thoughts into the sorts of, like, if you're watching the feed now, there's like just random numbers being printed on a screen and then flashes of different areas that some of them you never even see. And it's just like strange. You just don't know what's going on. And like these harsh red and black like screens. And
did you ever
quit out of the save menu?
And what does it say? It's like you'll regret that.
It's like you will regret that. And it's like, okay.
But I mean,
it's not even sounding like a threat. It is a threat.
I did it pretty early in the game because I saved and I wanted to just make sure I'd saved. So I was like, oh, yes. I did save. Let me just quit. I was like, oh, you're going to regret that. I'm like, what?
Yeah. even just opening the save menu, there's like a scream that happens when you do that. And it's like, holy shit, this is very... I never felt relaxed playing this game.
No, I think it's designed to throw you. But like on that, it's not... You know, you'll look at it and think, oh my God, this is a horror game. I don't think there's any jump scares or anything like that. Like, I never experienced
anything.
No, it's
not traditional like that.
It's more just like, you know, the atmosphere is very tense. You know, like you said, when you hit the save button, the game screams at you. It's just
literally,
it makes you feel uncomfortable. Yeah. You know, it's not like traditional horror that, you know, somebody's going
to
jump
and you never get used to it. You save so often and still every time I'm hitting that thing, I'm like, fuck's sake. Like, you know, it's very tense. But there are some moments though when you've killed an enemy and you have no idea when they're getting back up.
Oh yeah.
And
no.
When they do, they just scream at you.
Yeah.
Like, fucking hell.
That's fair. Yeah.
Like it's really good. I think the tank controls suck. I do not like the aiming at all.
There is some jank. I mean, look, so there's definitely inspiration from, like you said, Resident Evil and Silent Hill. And there's some modernization. So, for example, you can, while you're aiming, you can actually move, right?
Yes.
But there's definitely some jank in that. Did you ever get to a door and you're like, okay, I've got enemies chasing me. I need to get to this door, but the walk through the door icon isn't popping up.
Yep.
And you're like, okay, I need to step back and like angle myself perfectly in front of this door. And that creates like some unintentional, you know, horror, I guess. But it's not the stuff you're like, oh man, wow, that's so like well crafted. It's more like, man, they need to fix this.
Really annoying. This just feels like I got cheated here, and then I have to use like a health item, which is dumb. Like, I also think the inventory is like obscenely small.
It is, yeah.
I get that you had part of the allure of these games. Resident Evil does this a lot. Is juggling items in your inventory and, you know, deciding what you take between save rooms or whatever. But I think six is just way too restrictive here.
Six is fine, but at no point do they say, okay, cool, now you can have eight items. Like,
yeah, it never upgrades.
Some Resident Evil games, it is, oh, okay, you can only carry X amount at the beginning, but now you found a bag, you can carry more now. It makes sense contextually. Yeah. It's one of the first things you see, you read a poster in one of the opening areas, it's like, never forget the rule of six. Like, never have more than six items on your...
Yeah, because then you can't pick anything
you at
up.
Any time. Yeah. And that, like, see that through the whole game. And it can be very frustrating when you know, like, oh, I need to carry these three items to solve whatever puzzle I'm trying to do. Okay, but I've got...
Sometimes you need six items for a puzzle, which is insane to me. Like,
but then it's like, I've got three items and a gun and some healing, and the areas I'm running through are dark. I need this flashlight, so that's another item. And it's like, oh, okay.
And it's not like, oh, if you learn the layout of the room, you can navigate it. Like, if you're in a dark room, you try open the door, they're like, too dark to do that.
Yeah, this
like,
room...
Oh, come on. Like...
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just didn't like that aspect because like it just meant I was doing so much backtracking. Often, you know, because sometimes I'd be like, oh, I've explored like quite a bit of this area and I haven't run into enemies or I'm not dying, so I just want to continue. It's like, can't do that because you can't pick up anything. Like you've just got to go back to restock. Like But like you said,
it's a great game.
I enjoy the game. It's a great game. It's on Game Pass. So it's a easy recommendation from me there. It's like, it's quite long. It's like about 9 to 10 hours, I'd say.
8 to 10, yeah.
Depending and there's on a how, there's yeah. a phenomenal, yeah, maybe I shouldn't say it. Yeah, I'm not going to say it.
Yeah, don't say it.
Yeah. But I do wonder how many people don't realize it. You know what I mean? Because no, I realized for a long time. I did not.
I was like, what the heck?
I realized something was wrong, but I didn't know how to trigger how to continue. And when I did, I was like, oh, how many people didn't get this far?
They're like, oh, cool.
And it, yeah, it's a good game. You should, if you're interested in Signalis, you should, if you like Resident Evil, I think you should play this game. No doubt.
If you like the classic survival horror games, definitely
give it a go.
And just to round off what you said, the fact that it's made by two people, like, incredible.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, there's a lot of other people in the credits, but like design, animation, most of the sound, story, the same two people from Hungary, I think, if I'm not mistaken. It's insane. Phenomenal. Just really, really cool. Yeah.
Nice. That's Signalis.
Signalis. Play this game. What's up on your
play?
Play plate.
Okay, let me talk about... Let me just timestamp here. Mm-hmm. So I played a lot over the festive season, but let's talk about some of the bigger stuff I played. Have you heard of a little game called Immortality?
I have. It's a good old Sam Barlow gig. Newest one.
Yeah, so I've never played a Sam Barlow game, but Immortality popped up on my radar when good pal Noel, who I work with, recommended it. And then towards the end of last year, with all the game awards going out, this game popped up as a nominee in a bunch of categories for a number of things.
Yes.
So it's also on Game Pass, and I decided to give it a go. And this isn't a game, okay? It's more of an interactive experience. I mean, like, okay, it's got game elements, but for the most part, you're watching footage, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the premise is, you know, there's this actress, I'm blanking her name, it's Marissa or Sol.
Okay.
And she's disappeared. We don't know what happened to her. And your goal is to try to figure out what happened to her by stitching together or just watching three films that she acted in. So you, in doing this, you watch actual footage from the films and you see some behind the scenes stuff. And you need to try to piece together, like, what happened to her. And now these films take place over several decades. So you'll notice if you're watching the video feed that some of the films are like modern day, you know, it's crisp. The subtitles are, you know, big and bold, whatever. But you'll see later that you go to some of the older movies and, you know, the aspect ratio is a bit off. It looks a bit grainy because that's reflecting the technology of the time. But what makes this experience like super interesting is that at any point, any frame of footage, you can pause, click on an item, and it will take you to one of the three movies, a random scene that has that exact item or something similar. So like if you've been watching, you'll notice that earlier I paused on a pair of glasses, like sunglasses. I clicked on it. Now it's taken me to this other scene where she's holding a pair of sunglasses. So it becomes very interesting in trying to figure out, you start noticing themes or, you know, consistencies across these different movies or in specific movies. So a good example is one of the earlier movies is set in like a monastery. So at one point you'll see a cross and go like, oh, like that's quite a prominent item. Let me just spend some time clicking on crosses and you'll start getting footage specifically from this film, but with crosses in different scenes across it.
Okay.
It's a funny experience to recommend because you're watching footage and the first few hours are confusing because you don't know any of the characters' names. You're not watching anything like a chronological order. But the moment you start figuring out who people are, what the three movies are, what their premises are, it is like fascinating.
Oh, so it is three movies.
It's three movies that you're jumping between.
Okay.
It's fascinating because then you'll watch a scene and go, oh, this clearly takes place after that other scene I watched like an hour ago, for example. Then you'll click on an item, you'll be taken to either a completely different movie or another scene in this movie. You go, oh, okay. Now I know this person mentions this in this scene. They're clearly referencing something from another part of the movie or whatever. It's just, it's just such an interesting experience to play through because it is also open for interpretation, because there are some twists and turns. Like, there's a deeper layer of mystery to, like, what the hell is going on here? Like, what happened to this actress? And piecing it together is just, it's unlike anything I've played in a long time. I couldn't put this game down. Like, it's, you can roll credits. How the game dictates it, I don't know. I think there are some parameters, like maybe it expects you to watch X number of scenes before it takes you to the final scene or whatever. But I've seen playtimes differ from anywhere from 5 hours to 10 hours. My playtime was about 9 hours, and I rolled credits and I was like, but I'm not done. I know there are scenes
there's still
watched.
Stuff you want to see. Yeah.
But yeah, I take my hats off to this team, because not only this feature of clicking any item it's mind blowing. The fact that you can click any item and it will reference to somewhere else. Like, there were a number of times.
And can you pause at any point and then click on any item?
Yeah. So you'll pause.
That's
so
wild.
So, like, I think on, sorry, if you are watching the video footage here, I like paused and I clicked on the hat. So you see that I click on the hat, it takes me to another scene where the dude's wearing a hat. And you can do this in any frame in any of the movies. And I don't know how they did it. Like, the logistics behind this is wild. The fact that they had to, you know, like, mark items and make everything clickable. Like, within reason, you can't really click a random piece of floor, but you can click anything. You can click hats, like I'll click the camera in the scene here, and it'll always just take you somewhere.
Assume there's like limited things you can click in a scene, like not everything is inspectable.
Yeah, so, but I mean, anything that's prominent though, 100% you can click. Okay. Like even lights, you can click the lights. But so that side of the game is great. But another side is these actors and actresses. Like, the performances are insane. Like, really, really interesting films to watch. And just these people sell these performances. And what really makes it stand out, though, is you're watching them act like you're watching a scene from a movie. But then you'll often see, like, the director say, cut. And you get to see them, like, drop character and sort of be themselves. And the way they do that is just, it's insane. So I would recommend.
So do you eventually, you said you can roll credits. I mean, do you solve the underlying mystery of it?
You sort of get like an answer to some questions you might have.
Okay.
And again, like, it's open for interpretation. Like, you might go, this is what happened to her, or, this is, you know, something happened to her or whatever. But that final scene is like, sort of like the icing on the cake. You go like, oh, okay. But you still kind of want to watch the rest of the footage to be like, okay, I've missed some scenes. Let me just see if add more context to what I think happened. Very good game.
Wow.
And again,
I do know that this is kind of like an evolution of Sambala's like formula, because his previous two games, what were they? Her Story and Telling Lies, like, use a similar format, but they're much more linear.
Yeah.
They're not... You know, Her Story, which was kind of like his breakout, was kind of like a series of interviews with a woman in like an interrogation room, and you're trying to figure things out from there. You're not jumping between different complete formats of film and stuff. So this is quite a cool evolution of that.
It's very
wonder how they managed that. It seems like a big effort.
It seems like a big effort. And what's cool about this, though, is if you are looking to pick it up, so it is on Game Pass, so Xbox and PC, you can grab it there. But it's also on mobile. So if you've got an Android or iOS device, it's on both stores, I've checked. You can play it on your phone or tablet.
Seems like a good way to play it, actually.
If I'd known, I would have definitely played, like, because I watch a lot of my series in bed on my tablet. I would have definitely played it there. But I only figured this out after. I'd sat at my PC for like 9 to 10 hours.
Not a terrible thing.
Would you say
I mean, you used a mouse and keyboard obviously to navigate that. Would you say it would probably work well with a controller? Like, it would probably, so, they'd probably just have like fake mouse with the joystick, you know what I mean?
Probably, but I listened to the spoiler cast on Kinda Funny, and I never thought about this, but there are, like, it's difficult to talk about this game because I don't want to spoil like what could be twists or unexpected things, but you're on a keyboard and mouse. There's no vibrate. Okay. If you're holding a controller, the controller vibrates at certain points, which might allude to something. I was like, oh, okay. But on PC, there was an audio cue. That's how I knew something was happening. So it depends. So
they took that into account.
They said like, oh, well, they played with controller. How the hell do you not, observe this thing without the vibrates? So it's like, and I was like, oh, I know there was just like an audio cue that I picked up on that, indicated something. So I know that sounds very like obtuse, but for spoiler purposes, I can't tell you what I'm talking about. So on iPad, I presume you would just have the audio cue as well. Just no vibrate. But you're right. On controller, I think it's a thing of you can scrub through footage by probably like, rotating the analog or using the shoulder buttons to like go forward or back frames, whatever. But I played on PC and it was great. So yeah.
Okay. Nice.
Immortality.
I definitely want to give it a go. I know there are some strong opinions out there on people seem to be either enamored with Sam Barlow or they don't find his method of storytelling or game design like that captivating or actually interesting. So I think it's a very interesting medium and I'm kind of curious to give it a go. I do know he said his next game is going to be a more traditional, it will have graphics. That's what he said, which is interesting.
Well, with this game, it's something that could only work with this medium.
Yes.
Like it's clearly film, but you could never nail this in as a movie or as a series. It would never work.
It's like leaps and bounds ahead of what Netflix tried with
Kaleidoscope.
Bandersnatch. I haven't even tried I've heard Kaleidoscope's like a non-linear sort of storytelling.
It's interesting because I've heard mixed things about Kaleidoscope, people going like, oh no, like not good, or like, yeah, it was an interesting experience. And I was just thinking that premise of like Kaleidoscope, if you don't know, is a series that you can supposedly watch the show
in any
episodes
order.
But that's four episodes, whereas Immortality, you're getting served like dozens of different clips.
You're controlling when you jump between
clips.
Like Bandersnatch was that one, that Black Mirror experiment where they were like, oh, you at certain points you choose.
It's like a choose your own adventure game.
Yeah, it's like a choose your own adventure book, it was very rudimentary. It was like, oh, that's cool that I can do this, but like this is on a completely different plane, I think.
Immortality though. I'm telling you, if you've got a tablet for those long load shedding hours.
Are you gonna look at his other games now?
I have thought about it. I think they're a lot shorter, which is quite nice.
And from what I know, Her Story is much better than Telling Lies. So, okay. Yeah.
Nice.
But yeah, give it a go. I don't know if you know, Sam Barlow worked on a bunch of Silent Hill games before
out on his own. I did not know that.
He was a writer on Silent Hill Shattered Memories or something like that.
Oh.
So I don't know. Maybe he'll make horror next again. But yeah.
That's interesting because there are moments in Immortality where it straddles this line of like, I was playing and there were moments I was like, is this a horror game?
Yeah, that's where he comes from.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah, he was lead designer and writer on Silent Hill Origins and Silent Hill Shattered Memories.
Okay, that makes so much sense because again, with no spoilers, there are moments of Immortality that are just so jarring where I was like, is this meant to be a horror game? Like it made me feel so uncomfortable. I'm like, oh my god, I'm gonna put this off and go to bed, it's so dark. But I would recommend. So it's an unusual, again, like quote unquote game, but if you can get through the first hour or two and start figuring out who's who, it's like it's almost addictive just clicking through items to see like what will it take me to next, what scene will I get served next. Very cool.
I'm keen to give it a go. Really.
Very cool. Cool. Fly through some other stuff quick.
Yeah, let's do that.
Tell me
before I left, and kind of a little bit as I've been back, I dipped into Crisis Core. Yeah, so nice. Crisis Core, what is it? Crisis Core Reunion? Is that what it's called?
I think it's Reunion, Crisis. Yeah.
Reunion, yeah, is a basically like it blurs the line between like remaster and remake of the probably one of the best PSP games ever made. Mm. I say that in that the structure of the game is identical to the old one. You know, it's not like Final Fantasy VII Remake where the structure is completely different. This one is beat for beat the same game. But the sort of visual and mechanical overhaul that has taken place is so vast that it might as well be a remake on that front, because it just like you cannot compare how much better visually it looks. I mean, it still looks like a sort of game that should probably be played on like a mobile platform because it's not like Final Fantasy VII Remake fidelity, but it still looks really good, I think.
Yeah.
And the combat is sort of similar. If you play the game on PSP, you'll know that when you walk through an area, so each mission takes place in like a self-contained area. It's not like an open world. You still do that. But when you walk through an area, it's sort of like a Pokemon thing. You'll either encounter enemies or enemies will just pop up from the fucking ground.
Yeah, and it'll be like,
yeah. And you have that same voice, which is like entering combat mode, and then you're fighting, and then you fight, and then combat resolved, and then you're back to exploring. It's two very distinct different modes of play that you can't like seamlessly blend between, but it's still cool. The combat feels nice. The whole it's very action focused, so you're attacking, you're making choices on when to block, are you using, you know, your potions and materia like very frequently during fights, and then you've got the DMV? DMZ?
I think it's the DMZ.
Might be DMZ.
It's a something. It's the random number
it's slot basically machine these thing. Yeah, it's like a slot machine that like has numbers that, depending on the combinations or patterns that you get, will give you certain buffs within battle. So sometimes it'll be like, oh, you have no MP cost for a certain amount of time or AP cost. And the portraits on the slot machine, so to speak, are determined by characters you've met in the story, and then their frequency of showing up is determined by what's happening in the story. Yeah. So if some big story moment has just happened with a certain character like Angeal or Sephiroth, then they will more likely show up in there, and you are more likely to get a match with them and have like a limit break or a summon. So it's a really cool system in that you can't control it, but it's there, and because it's so contextual to the story, it feels kind of interesting when it's like, oh, this big story beat happened. Oh, now I have access to Sephiroth's like big attack for the next few battles because, hey, he's just going to pop up on this thing more often.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Aerith is showing up there a bunch, and so I'm getting a lot of healing. It feels really cool, and I think that's what made it stand out on PSP.
It was a very unique system.
Definitely. I don't think any other Final Fantasy has kind of adopted something similar. So it's cool that mechanic hasn't really aged over time. I do think the structure of the game definitely still feels like one that is more suited to portable, because like a lot of your side missions are these 5-minute distractions that you load into an area, you fight two enemies and a boss, and then you're out. So playing that on a console feels weird. Yeah. I've been playing a lot on Steam Deck, so I have been playing, you know, short 30-minute bursts, and that feels more natural.
I was going to say, Steam Deck or Switch is probably the ideal way to play this. I don't know how it runs on Switch. So. I don't like visually if it's how demanding it is.
Like,
or
I think it looks fine, but I think it's like 30 frames per second, which kind of sucks. No. Yeah, not ideal. But yeah, I recall playing it on PSP over months because I was just chipping away at it every now and then.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't feel the need to sit down with a game like this for like 2-3 hours at a time because it's not designed for that. No. It gets very repetitive very quickly.
Yeah.
But I'm having a good time. I think the voice actor for Zach is very fun and goofy. But he's a good time. And I forgot how ridiculous this story is.
The story is.
While also being like completely heartfelt and a really good prologue to the events of Final Fantasy VII. So
yeah, it's almost criminal that this game has existed only on PSP until a few months ago.
For this long. Yeah.
Because it's it again, the story is very goofy for 70% of it, but it is so important.
I mean, 90% of the time you see Zach, he's doing squats. Like what?
But it makes sense. That's why Cloud does squats. Like, come on.
This is the thing. Like everything at first, like you play it and you're like, this is so stupid. Mm. But then you start piecing together things. You're like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's. And also, like, I want to give this game credit in that a lot of, think of Final Fantasy Remake, the way that combat system works. It's very similar to what Crisis Core did
so long ago,
where it is like you're attacking and you can dodge and block and do all these things and then like cast spells. I mean, Final Fantasy VII Remake, you know, has probably the better version of it, kind of blurs the original with the new system in that, you know, there's the little time gadget fills up, whatever. But it's, Crisis Core had that. It's like years ago.
Yeah.
It blew me away. I was like, oh my God, like I can actually move in battle. I'm not standing still.
Yeah, it wasn't, I mean, when compared to like traditional Final Fantasies at the time, which were at the time like completely turn-based, this was like, oh, this is the action Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
Like this is what, you know, what was it Nomura who worked on this? Like at the time? Because it would make a lot of sense. Like he's like, oh, I'm going to do something different and I'm just going to keep making it better and better.
Yeah.
Because you're right. Remake is this battle system minus the whole DMZ thing.
Minus the in-game loot boxes that don't cost money,
it's,
you know?
Essentially. But it's like, it's a more expansive, like action-focused RPG take. I haven't finished it myself, but I've heard that the story doesn't change.
Mm.
So it's not taking into account the sort of narrative changes that happened in Remake. So yeah, the sort of, the manner in which you see Zack in Final Fantasy VII Remake, I don't think is affected by this release. I think they're just doing something completely different. This is more a, we're going to just get this game off PSP hell and let people play it.
Yeah, let people actually.
And thank goodness, because it's fantastic.
That's good. Nice. That's Crisis Core.
Yeah, and then I just lately, very quickly, I've been playing a lot of The Witcher 3 again. Because that whole big update came out literally a day before I left in December.
You turned to Shadi and said, we're delaying our trip.
I need to this again.
The wind's howling.
So I'd been waiting for a long time to kind of do a replay of The Witcher, and I knew that this update was coming, and then it got delayed, and it took forever. Anyway, I'm playing it on console. It's good. I played around with the like very interesting ray tracing mode for a while. It runs at 30 frames per second. I don't like that. It looks nice though. It definitely looks nice, but man, that extra fluidity is hot. It's good. And I'm enjoying the game. I think some of it is showing its age. Its combat is really not great. And I think some of the side quests are bad, but a lot of them are very good. And it just shows how most games just don't have that yet. That level of quality in its side quest. So that's a good time. I'm thoroughly enjoying it and just chipping away at it again, because I haven't played it since I played it for review in 2015. So I haven't played the expansions either. So I'm getting to those eventually now as well.
Nice. Yeah, that's if I dive back into it, I'm just gonna skip the base game and take the expansions.
It's cool that you can. Yeah, it's cool that they just like level you up for the expansion. So that's cool.
Nice. Cool. Last thing from me. I had a hankering for some Dark Souls over the break, and I thought, you know what?
Hankering?
Is that the right term?
No. You're right. I was just like,
and I was like, I've played all these other good From games. I've never played Dark Souls 1 and 2, and hey, they're both on sale. So bought Dark Souls 1, played it, and let me tell you, this game aged in some ways, but in terms of design and stuff, real good. Like,
do you play it on console or PC?
I played on console, so you own it on console too. Both.
Oh, hello, let's go. That's awesome.
Dark Souls 1, man, like it's amazing how that game all those years ago put From on the map in terms of level design. I'm honestly, everyone I've spoken to about this game, I've said, I've just told them I'm floored by how good that hub is, and how things just lead back to it in the most unexpected ways. And I just keep thinking, like, this is an old game. Like, this design back then must have blown people's minds of like holy shit, I can't believe I've gone through hell and I've come up a lift and I'm right back to my central hub. You know, like we always praise Bloodborne and all the games that followed. Like, wow, I can't believe this. So if you've sort of
nailed it from the get-go.
Yeah. Look, there's some real dated stuff there. Like you can't roll diagonally, which takes some real getting used to. You can only roll.
It changes everything.
You can only roll forward, left, right, or back. That must have been so weird
for your like muscle memory to
adapt. Let me roll behind this. Oh, I could only roll to the right.
Rip.
Damn it. It's got some jank, some real parts that make you hate life.
How was Blighttown?
Also, Blighttown wasn't that bad. Maybe like it's not great, but maybe I thought it was worse than it was because like I know everyone goes, oh my god, Blighttown, the worst place.
I think it gets that rap because it is the traditional From Software like poison area. But also when the game released, it ran like shit.
Yeah, so I looked up a lot of people contending with that.
Yeah.
There was an area there, pitch black. Like literally so dark, and you can fall and die. Like stuff like that. I'm like, man, this just isn't aged well. Like I get it. That's cool. It's meant to be difficult.
It's why also, they have that rap for being unfair, you know?
Yeah. And also fast travel is not unlocked till about halfway through the game. So.
Wait, what?
So you have to run from area to area, which is why I think the interconnectedness was such a good thing back then because it's, you know, sort of sped up the time between hubs.
Wait, so when you rest at a bonfire, you can still upgrade, right?
No. You can only...
What?
You can only upgrade at... Wait, do you upgrade at a bonfire or a firekeeper? I can't remember, but it's, yeah, there's some stuff that's dated.
That's insanity to me. Like, that's... What... I can't believe that. Maybe. I didn't know it was like that. So you have to backtrack to go and upgrade.
Yeah.
I might not play this game.
It's something. No, look, it's really good. And you do unlock fast travel like halfway through. The thing is, if you know, like if you're going to play the game, I would tell you, don't do the side areas. Like fast track to the part where you unlock fast travel because that'll make it a lot easier. I didn't know that. I was playing the game blind. And at one point,
like, how would you know?
I was like, oh my God, you can't fast travel in this game. And then later, it's like, oh, I unlocked the ability. Thank God. but yeah, the Dark Souls 1, really good. Dated, but I'm glad I've played it. And then Dark Souls 2, man, this game is very different to. Well, I've always known Dark Souls 1, Dark Souls 2 is like the black sheep of the family. And I've never quite understood why. You know, it gets a lot of hate. Not necessarily hate. I just think people don't revere it as much as, you know, any of the other From games.
Miyazaki wasn't working on because he's working on Bloodborne.
Yeah, and like, I get it. It doesn't feel like a Dark Souls game in terms of aesthetic. Like, there are a lot of areas in that game where you're running through a forest or like a forest is a good example because it just doesn't feel like I'm used to running through, you know, a labyrinth of a castle or a dungeon or whatever. But in terms of gameplay, and not to say like you do obviously get to castles and that late in the game, but that game is really good. Like it's different, but it's phenomenal. If you're a From fan, 100% play this game. Some good stuff. There's some memorable bosses. And you can fast travel from the get-go.
Okay. Okay.
Which is really
I'm already in.
And this hub, so you know Dark Souls traditionally have the Firelink Shrine. This place has a hub called Majula, I think, which is like on this beautiful like cliffside overlooking the sea. I'm like, this feels not like a Dark Souls, but it's really pretty.
Is the shrine in Fire Shrine in Dark Souls 1 the same as the one in 3?
I don't know. But I mean, in terms of its purpose, I think it's the same thing.
Okay, but like aesthetically, it doesn't look the same?
Oh, no, it's completely different. Way different.
Because okay. I know like, they're both about linking the flame and all that, but
yeah, like, and
much time passes even, between one or the other? You know,
even Dark Souls 2, when it starts, it's pretty much like you're a cursed hollow and there's nothing really about like, you know, there was an age of darkness and light. Like it's not Dark Souls, but it's still very good. And there are links to the franchise. Like I was blown away. I was reading about one optional area you can get to. And it's like, oh yeah, this there's this dragon skeleton here, and people believe that this is the same dragon you see in Dark Souls 1 in this area. It's like, oh, so like maybe there are links to the world. A lot of people speculate that Dark Souls 2 is the same world, but like thousands of years in the future or whatever. I'm like, that's cool.
Okay.
But yeah, I played a lot over December. It was a good time.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because those are two quite meaty games. They're not short.
They were, I mean, I think both of them were about 25 to 30 hours each, which
it's not too bad. Yeah. I mean, it's not in the context of Elden Ring, that seems trivial.
No, that's nothing.
You could finish all three Dark Souls games in the time it takes you to finish like an Elden Ring campaign.
Oh God. Well, yeah. Then last night I booted up Dark Souls 3. I'm like, am I going to play this game again? Like,
do it.
Yeah.
Go fight the dancer, see and if then, you can get a first time.
Then you know
time.
What happens. Then I'm playing Bloodborne again. Then I'm playing Sekiro.
Oh, my God.
Then I'm playing Elden Ring again. So
maybe 2023 will be the year where we get a Bloodborne patch. Who
maybe.
Knows?
One can only hope. But that is all the stuff I have been playing.
A journey.
What a journey we've all been on.
What a journey.
Speaking of journeys, shall we journey to game releases? Ew.
We shall. What a great segue. Love it.
Yes.
We are looking at game releases from today, January 21st, up until January 27th. I don't think there's too much.
I mean, there's this one game that starts with the four and ends with the spoken that's coming out. And isn't there a game that starts with
a
dead and ends
games.
With the space as well?
There's a bunch of games. Just real quick, yesterday, Monster Hunter Rise came out on consoles and is out on Game Pass. So
play
it's good.
This game. Just spend the hours learning the game and the systems and getting through that high skill ceiling, and you're in for one of the best gaming experiences. I love Monster Hunter Rise. It's a really good time.
It's a really good time. Mm. So kicking the week off on Tuesday, we've got Forspoken, the big Squeenix RPG that's only coming to PC and PS5.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's only next gen.
No, but not even on Xbox.
Definitely not Xbox. I did not like the demo for this game at all. I thought it was actively bad.
Few review codes have gone out apparently, which is red flag territory, but yeah, I'm also quite curious to see what does this game score.
I'm like, it's so beautiful. Like, it really is like visually like very advanced, I think. I'm not vibing with the dialogue or like even the combat I don't really dig that much. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm keen to see whether or not the demo is just a bad demo, you know, and we'll see.
Mahokenshi,
coming to PC January 24th. And we've got Waylon Unexpected Guests, PC January 24th. Risen, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, January 24th. I think that's a remaster of an old game. Might be wrong.
No.
Power Chord, coming to PC January 26th. Roller Drama, PC, Switch, iOS, Android, January 26th. Shoulders of Giants, PC and Xbox Series X and S, January 26th. Oddballers, PC, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, Luna, January 26th. Nice. Tumble Time, Android and iOS, January 26th.
Hold
on. Coming out on January 26th.
What platform is Luna?
Luna's Amazon streaming service.
Okay.
Now that, you know, Stadia's dead, have to talk about the other one. The big release for the week and the one I'm very excited for.
Oh boy.
Dead Space. Also only a next-gen release. PC, PS5, Xbox Series X and S.
I am exceedingly excited. Poop your pants in zero gravity.
I really, really, really hope this isn't another Callisto Protocol, because boy, I was excited for that and that was not good.
I don't think so. I mean, if they keep the core environments and enemies I don't know.
Like, and I want to say the previews have been good, but the previews for Callisto were good because they showed off the good parts of the game, so you never know.
Yeah, we'll see.
Wonderland Nights, White Rabbit's Diary, coming to every platform under the sun. January 27th. Atone, Heart of the Elder Tree, PC, PS4, Switch, January 27th. Can't believe we're getting Elden Ring DLC so early.
I can't believe this. cool.
Yeah, that's it. That's pretty much the heavy hitters for January. The bigger games are now coming in like Feb. You've got stuff like Atomic Heart, you've got Returnal coming to PC. you've got Hogwarts Legacy, I guess. That's going to be a big release. Whether or not, like, your thoughts on J.K. Rowling aside, like, that thing's going to be gonna big, sell, I'm pretty so sure. Well. I'm very keen for
Wild Hearts.
Wild Hearts, yeah. I'm
curious to see how it does.
Yeah, and then you've got a whole new Yakuza game, or Like a Dragon Ishin, coming on February 21st. So, yeah, big thing. Octopath Traveler 2, a new Kirby game.
Well, that's a...
It's a remaster.
Wii U remaster. Oh, yeah. It's the Wii remaster.
Was it in a 3DS one?
I don't know. Well, my boy Kirby did well last year with Forgotten Dreamland. Let's see.
Love to see it. Love to see it.
See it. Cool. Should we get...
Every day we inch closer to Resident Evil 4.
I know. Can't wait.
Can't. Should we jump to gaming news and fly through this smorgasbord of stuff? What should we start? Should we do the... I guess the breaking news of the week. Marvel's Avengers. The collaboration between Crystal Dynamics and Square Enix is dead. Game over. Well, they're not taking servers offline. They are just ending support for content for it. So basically, Crystal Dynamics made it official that the game's final update will arrive on the 31st of March this year, with entire support ending on the 30th of September. So that would be patches and stuff like that. The single player and multiplayer components will remain available when support ends in September. But last November's 2.7 update, which introduced Winter Soldier, is now confirmed to be the game's final content release. And March's 2.8 update will bring final balancing. No new cosmetics are coming to the game. And the paid marketplace will be switched off in September when development officially ends.
I would love to know numbers in this game. How many people played it? How much money did it make or not make? Because that's never been clear. Sort of just been like this project running along, quietly getting updates with no fanfare.
I definitely think it didn't hit the numbers that
100%
Marvel was expecting, that Crystal was expecting, that Square was expecting, but at the same time, this game was not good.
Like, it was a very average game.
It had a pretty decent, not a like good or anything, a decent like campaign, and that's like about it. It just, its live service nature completely destroyed it from the get-go. Yeah, it just felt wrong.
Yep.
Unfortunate. But yeah, Crystal's now full steam ahead on Tomb Raider and supporting the perfect dark game that will never ever come out, I'm pretty sure. So yeah.
Speaking of
there was a slight report, so that's why I didn't put in news, but this morning, that like there's been troubles with Perfect Dark and the new Tomb Raider will come out before Perfect Dark. I'm like, what?
What the heck?
Like, okay.
Well, speaking of games that are never coming out. Shit. What is going on at Ubisoft, Kate? So Ubisoft cancels 4 more games and delays Skull and Bones for the 6th time amid financial...
Skull and Bones was meant to come out in March. Like, it wasn't even that far. Ubisoft's in a bad place at the moment. Just overall. Just none of their games are hitting.
It's sad, though, because like I have a soft spot for Ubisoft purely from...
Same.
The point of view that... They'll release, so like I always look at Rainbow Six Siege as an example, where it launched, it was okay, but over years, that game got way better. They've supported it and they've really built it up. And they've done that with a lot of the games where it launches, like it's okay, and they just make the experience better over time.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know, I just have a soft spot for the company, but in the same breath, I'm like, yeah, but they haven't really broken their formulas. Like we always joke, you know, it's an open world game. It follows Ubisoft formula like a Far Cry or an Assassin's Creed, where it's just you got to climb that tower to unlock part of the map, and
you got to do that side mission.
They haven't evolved really their formulas across many of their iconic franchises. So it's,
and I think that's part of the problem, is they've just been left behind while the industry and the expectations of consumers have changed. They just haven't. So what they did was double down on like their big franchises, and in doing so, extend out the releases of them. So now you have multiple years between an Assassin's Creed or a Far Cry, or, you know, and they're like, okay, well, what can we do to plug the gaps? Oh, let's bring back Watch Dogs. Didn't work out. Let's make new games like Hyperscape. Didn't work out. What games can we develop that have like a long tooth? You know, they've been trying with Assassin's Creed. They announced a live service Assassin's Creed coming in the future, you know. But there's not much on the horizon for them that seems that exciting. Like, you've got Assassin's Creed Mirage, which is like a back to basics one coming out this year. But beyond that, you've got live service Assassin's Creed. I bet we'll get another Far Cry. Skull and Bones maybe one day will come out. Yes. But what else is going on? Like, it's, yeah. And now they canceled four unannounced games so they can focus on the franchises they already have established. The franchises that already have sort of waning interest, which is, yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but did Ubisoft do, they had a stint where they did a whole lot of indie games like Child of Light and Unravel.
Very long ago. Yeah. But like, not Unravel, that was EA.
Was that EA?
Yeah, so Ubisoft did Child of Light and Valiant Hearts.
Valiant Hearts, those were both great games. Like,
and then they did some of the Rayman stuff in that engine as well.
But those games, I think they're smaller in scope, very good games. Like, I don't know why. Maybe those are the four unannounced projects, for example. Like, it's these smaller experiments that just aren't working out. But I feel it's a mistake to also just put all their eggs on these franchises that feel a bit tired. Like, to be completely honest, like, I'm all for Assassin's Creed going to its roots, but I'm also like, man, we've had a lot of Assassin's Creed in the last decade. Far Cry 6,
and a lot of it's just not been great.
No, so. like I liked Valhalla well enough, but I know it doesn't stand out like, you know, the original Assassin's Creed. Maybe not as beloved, or I don't know. Odyssey did well, and Origins, but. Yeah, it's.
I think Assassin's Creed is the one franchise that's really keeping them afloat. Keeping them afloat at this point. Like, Assassin's Creed and Rainbow Six, and I don't even know how much money they like still gleaning from Rainbow Six as a, you know, as a platform. Like, Mario and Rabbids, according to them, didn't hit their sales targets, even though the game sold pretty well. You know, what else did they release last year?
I don't know.
They released Rainbow Six Extraction, which no one cared about.
No one cared. Yeah, that was in Game Pass as well, wasn't it?
It was.
Interesting. Well, in the I now diverted to Ubisoft, but in the same vein as Avengers, Suicide Squad game battle pass and other info has leaked, which has made people very nervous about this game being a.
I'm kind of surprised that people forgot this is a live service game. Like, it was announced as that.
I think maybe just seeing it, you know, like...
It's just like a reminder.
Yeah, like, oh, like, shit, it really is a live service game. But I think Avengers PTSD is like... like, look, you got, this isn't the Justice League or whatever, but it's for all intents and purposes DC's version of the Avengers in the gaming world. And also, it's coming out from same people who did the very, very good Arkham franchise. You know, all the Arkham Knight games, Arkham series. I don't know, and it's I'm very curious to see how this game actually is, because I love those Batman games. But I think the live service stuff we've seen time and time again is just like, it's dangerous territory.
Yeah, yeah, I just. So in this article, VGC has like a source that says, oh, you won't start the game underpowered. You know, you know, like a lot of live service games are, you start at a power level of zero, and the whole idea of live service is to get those numbers just up. So their source is like, oh, you won't start off debuffed and weak. You you just start off great and get ridiculous like Arkham Knight's Batman.
Nice.
Now, I don't know how that works within a context of a game that is definitely a live service game. Like, yeah, they can say all they want that, oh, the battle pass is only for cosmetics. But if you're a live service game, the idea is to give people a reason to keep coming back.
Yeah.
And that only happens when you are changing gameplay. You're not coming back for cosmetics. And that is the, like you said, this is the exact like wall that Avengers ran into, where you were playing as these characters who seemed way, way, way less interesting and less powerful than they really are for the purposes of an arbitrary number that needs to continue going up over months.
Like, I know.
You can't have both. Like,
no, but
you
like
can't, you can't be like, this is going to be an Arkham Batman game, but also a live service. That doesn't work.
But like, good Paul Garth points out in Avengers is like, the fact that Hulk has a health bar is just dumb.
It's, yeah, it's, and for Avengers, it was never going to work because like, maybe in a way Suicide Squad works maybe slightly better because all the characters are sort of within like an orbit where they are similar enough that their gameplay style can be interesting while not needing to be so vague that it applies to all of them. Whereas, you know, like in Avengers, you had to play as Iron Man and Thor and Hulk, who are three completely different people. Mm. Like, one of them shoots stuff and flies, the other one hits stuff and flies, the other one just hits stuff and he's big. Mm. In Suicide Squad, you've got Deadshot, Captain Boomerang, both of them are melee people.
Mm.
Harley Quinn, probably, I mean, sorry, ranged. Mm. Harley Quinn is like melee and range, and King Shark is like a brawler. So they kind of all blend within each other.
Yeah.
So I think from that perspective, it might be better. I hope. I don't know.
I don't know. It's with Avengers, that's 100% a game that should have just been a single player / co-op experience. Yeah,
absolutely.
Just absolutely. Hone it in. Don't make it, because the problem there is that you had to make it. Sorry, like to your point, you almost had to like blur the line between characters. Like every character is going to have a mobility move, you know, every character is going to have a light attack and a heavy attack. And
because how would you choose, like, how could you make every level and every enemy compatible with each one?
But all that happens is that you're just doing the same thing with a different skin, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's like playing as Iron Man and Captain America is there's no mechanical difference between the two, because it's just like, okay, well, square is your attack. And for that, it's like a punch or a shoot with your blast. And it's like, visually that's different,
but the same.
In what you're doing, they don't feel different.
No.
So I don't know. That's the issue I had with Suicide Squad at the beginning as well. It's just like this trying to mash four characters together and say, you can play as anyone. It's the same thing that Gotham Knights ran into.
Yeah.
And even then, those characters are very similar.
Mm.
They just all felt kind of boring to play as a consequence. Yeah. So, yeah.
We will see.
It's out soon. It's out in May. Mm. So let's see if Rocksteady, you know, it's been 8 years since Arkham Knight.
Yeah.
They've been working on this for a long time.
They have.
It will be tragic if it comes out and immediately is like, oof, this is not,
pull one out and chat for Darren.
Darren will not be a happy man after Gotham Knights. If this is not okay, then I feel really bad for him. I'm hoping because like Rocksteady is a very proven developer. They, you know, they solved a lot of the issues with like comic book games with Batman and Arkham. Mm. So they might solve this. But I look at Gotham Knights and I look at WB Montreal, who made a really good Batman game.
Yeah.
And that thing was not even close to good. So we'll see.
Hectic. What do you want to bounce to?
Very quickly, I guess, Returnal. I think we mentioned it in releases, but Returnal finally got a release date on PC. It's out on February 15th. Nothing super special yet. It's all the sort of stuff that Sony has done with their releases on PC. You got like widescreen support. It says Returnal offers 60 FPS across all graphics modes. I don't know what the fuck that means. Like, that's very dependent on your hardware, but anyway. But you've got DLSS and AMD FSR. You've got ultra wide support and support for the DualSense controller. Obviously, if you use a DualSense on your computer, it has to be wired. It can't be wireless. So
play this game.
It is fantastic.
It's actually it's kind of sad to see, like, looking back on it now, this was the first year of the PS5, right? Yes, like within that first year.
It wasn't too long after launch, yeah.
This game actually used the DualSense in a very, very cool way. And at the time, I remember going like, oh man, like if other games can implement it this way, shit, like the DualSense is the best. And to be honest, I don't think any games have really utilized the DualSense quite in this fashion. You know, outside of the Astro Playroom demo, which is it's a showcase for the controller. If you're playing this in PC, like, and you have access to DualSense, that is the way to play the game. It's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if you don't, Returnal itself, just great game. I loved the shit out of this game.
I loved it, and I kind of want to play it again on PC just so I can play the DLC as well, because I'm interested, though. I remember at the time when Returnal released, there was a lot of hubbub about it being only on PS5 because it required the speeds of the SSD. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at these specs here. The minimum spec says you can play it on a hard drive.
Yeah, it says
SSD recommended, but like, yeah.
I wonder if that just means that if you play,
there's also no speed specification for these SSDs. No. Like, there are some SSDs that are dirt slow compared to the PS5. So,
but I wonder if that means, because a lot of this game is you walking through doors, you know, and it generates an area or whatever. So I wonder if all that happens that you just wait,
it'll be
a
slow
few seconds.
Yeah,
at each
that
door.
Will kind of be shit though,
which,
because
this
the
game
momentum
the PS5,
of that game
yeah,
is so nice.
When you when you start a new run, you just like fly through those doors.
Yeah, it feels good. Feels good when you just hit a door and it just opens. Like,
I really need to replay this game. Like, I enjoyed the heck out of it.
It's hard. I found it very difficult going at the first few runs, but man, what a great time. When you do that very first clear, the first time when you, so much stress, you're just like, please, God, no, I don't want to die all the way here, please. Oh, it feels so good.
It's too good.
It's so good.
Cool. Last bits of news. So you know about this. The Last of Us game director advocates unionization following TV credit snub.
So The Last of Us is now streaming on HBO Max and locally. So
have you seen that first episode?
Yeah, it's very good.
Really
I think.
Good. I would recommend.
I know you really enjoyed it as well. Mm. So yeah, I thought it was great. I didn't realize it was such a long episode as well. It's like almost an hour and a half.
I climbed into bed saying, I'm just going to watch this 40-minute episode. Nope. My God.
It's like 1 hour, 20
minutes. Yeah.
So if you're at all familiar with the first Last of Us, you'll know that Neil Druckmann, who is widely known as like the director and creator of the franchise, isn't actually the only person who created it. So back in 2013, there was another developer, Bruce Straley, who had been at Naughty Dog for a very long time. If you play Crash Team Racing, you'll see his name in the credits there. He co-directed the first game with Neil Druckmann and co-wrote it, as far as I understand. And yet the HBO show only credits Neil Druckmann as the writer of the game, which, you know, the first season is adapting the first game. Straley is not entirely happy about this.
I'm sure.
And he says that this snub is sort of an argument for unionization. He said to the LA Times, someone who was part of the co-creation of that world and those characters isn't getting a credit or a nickel for the work they put into it. Maybe we need unions in video games to be able to protect creators. This is also kind of like feeding into a more and more prominent problem that seems to be being reported on, that crediting in the video game industry is awful.
Yeah.
The Callisto Protocol was hit pretty hard in December for omitting many, many developers from credits who had either not been there until the completion of the game or were just omitted for some other reason. And there's been debates in the past whether or not, like, if you leave a studio halfway through the development of a game, whether you should still appear in the credits. And my argument, and I think a sane person's argument, has always been, if there is something in that game that is yours that you touched, you should be in the credits. That is how it works. You credit work that belongs to a person. So the fact that Bruce Straley isn't at Naughty Dog anymore, has a strained relationship with Naughty Dog, should not mean he should be omitted from being credited for something he helped create.
Yeah.
You know? Whether or not he was involved or not, like in the same way that a series that adapts books, whether or not they got the author involved, doesn't mean they can't say, yeah, you created, you say, based on blah, 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 because it is based on that, you know? So, yeah, I don't know. It's a weird thing, and I sympathize a lot with Strelly, because I do think he should be credited for this. PlayStation and HBO haven't commented, neither is Neil Druckmann. Not that I think it's Druckmann's decision. But yeah, he worked on The Last of Us and Left Behind, and then he left Naughty Dog following the release of Uncharted 4. He had been at the studio for 18 years. So kind of shitty. I think it's very shitty. So yeah, I guess keep that in mind when watching it, that it's not just Neil Druckmann, who is a big, you know, force for The Last of Us. But yeah, but still, Australia had a big hand in getting this to market at the time and being a success. Yeah.
God damn. Last bits of news. The Stadia is officially dead. RIP. It's gone.
Yeah. Servers are gone. It is. I think if you go to the website now, it just says, thanks.
Thanks. That's the whole page.
Yeah, just thanks. Thanks. We tried. Thanks.
After 3+ years of service, the ambitious cloud gaming initiative Stadia has been shut down.
Only three years. Wow.
Hectic.
Listen, I think it's sad because I think the tech was good.
The model was dumb, though.
The model was what killed this thing from day one. Yeah. The model just did not work. Like trying to create it as its own separate ecosystem when people were still, while also not supporting it in many regions and people still being like kind of 50-50 on the idea of cloud gaming, I don't know who decided that would be a good idea.
But it's also the fact that Game Pass, Xbox are like, okay, do you have Game Pass? Cool. You can enjoy cloud gaming.
Yeah.
That's like, you still, it's the same fee, it's all included, you don't have to pay extra to own the games, whatever. Yeah, it's just, you put them side by side, like, oh, Google, like, you got to do something.
The thing is, there was a lot of criticism early on about that. Like, this was the big sticking point, was like, guys, you can't, this model doesn't make sense. Like, even developers are saying, well, there's no point in us putting, you know, doing the work to get our games to work nicely on Stadia, because like the possibility of an audience is not, and they just never listened. I mean, this is unsurprising to anyone who paid attention to Stadia, but it's just annoying because it's going to be seen as, oh, cloud gaming doesn't work. I think cloud gaming works. I just think the models haven't been figured out. I think Microsoft probably has the best one right now, where it's like, you can stream games if you subscribe to Xbox Game Pass, but also like all of your purchases are available on a console or a platform that is offline, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a bummer. Yeah. And it's a bummer for the people who actually invested time and money into this platform. But Stadia is issuing full refunds to everyone who uses service, although I guess it's a bit slow.
Maybe not a lot of money, but still imagining how much money they have to give back. Yikes. Yeah. In the opposite of bummer news, Stray is helping to raise money for real life stray cats.
That's cool. I like that.
Feel good story for you. Stray, really good game. Is it game of the material? No. Do I still love the hell out of it? Yes.
Yes. I'm 100% on board with you.
Raising money for stray cats. I think that's very cool. I like that.
So it says here, Stray has been helping cats organizations by providing codes for them to use in raffles. One such organization, the Nebraska Humane Society, said the shelter's marketing specialist said, we decided that the best way to collaborate would be to give away several game codes for the game Stray through our Twitter account through $5 donations. It was very successful, and the initial fundraiser raised about $8,000. Nice. That's pretty cool. Yeah. Another shelter in the US said they raised enough money in their code raffle to spay 25 cats.
That's cool. Love to see it.
That's awesome. That's really awesome.
If you haven't played Stray, it's a good time.
Yeah, it's a good time. I do enjoy it. I do enjoy it.
But that is all the gaming news for this week. We're back. We're back in business.
We're back in business. Jeez, it's been a while.
It's been a while.
I guess we should hop along to questions. I'm not sure how many there are, but if you want to send us questions, you can email us checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com. Yeah, that's the one.
Yo, it's been a long time.
Yeah. Then at Checkpoint Chat on all of our social platforms. What have we got on the dock for today? Do we have
A whole one question from Good Pal Keegan, okay, best_bash.
Saw this on Twitter, wasn't it?
Yeah. What is a good monitor size to aim for gaming and working in between? I need some monitor setup suggestions, please. I think personally, 27 inches probably the best middle ground. Like, it's not too big, it's not too small. A fair bit of visual real estate. Yeah, and in terms of monitors, I ended up getting what you recommended last year, the Dell, I do not know what model this is.
The one I recommended?
Yeah, the Dell.
Was it the same one as mine?
I think it's the same as 27 16
inch. Yeah, it's probably the same as mine then.
The 165 hertz, love that high refresh rate.
Yeah, it's the same as mine. Yeah, I super recommend that monitor. That was the one I was going to say. So to your point, I think 27 inch is a good size. Specifically at 1440p, I think there is zero reason to invest in a 4K display at that size and zero reason to invest in a 4K display below 34 inches. With that said, 32 inches with 1440p, the pixel density is too low. So for gaming, it might get by, but for work, it will, like, any sort of reading, typing, anything you'll notice. Like, it would just look fuzzy and not great. So 27 inches is the best size. The monitor I have and the one I recommend, Matty, I'm not sure which one it is. I'll look on Woodway quickly. But it is a Dell monitor, which is like 165 hertz. It's 1440p. It's got NVIDIA G-Sync compatibility. It says it's got HDR. Ignore it because it's bad. Most HDR monitors is bad, but that's, I guess, changing with OLED displays coming in the future. But this one's got a IPS panel. It looks great. It's got AMD FreeSync as well. So it is the Dell S2721DGFA.
That is it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And if you want a multi-monitor setup, you can get two of these bad boys. Or I would say, in my opinion, get one monitor for primary work and primary gaming. Get a secondary monitor.
Get a baby monitor. That's cheaper.
Lower refresh rate. And that can be used for, like, your secondary, you know, like where you have your tasks or your debug or whatever.
Yeah.
So, if you want a multi-monitor, well, if you want the flexibility of a multi-monitor display, but you want to have it as one display, then you'd look at, like, an ultra-wide. But those price wise start getting quite super intense.
Pricey.
For like decent options. There is a Dell option that I've seen in person and used and quite like. It's the Dell 3422 DWG. It's like two 1440p monitors next to each other, it's like one and a half, sort of. It's quite nice. It's also not, it's reasonably priced. It's not like the Alienware one, which is $25,000. That would be another alternative, and that will work out pretty well as well. So there's actually one here from Asus that is like 14,000 rand for an ultra wide of that size as well. So they're getting down there in price. It's definitely cheaper than buying two of these exact monitors, and then you've got one display with one refresh rate and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Or what you can do is you can sit tight and wait for the 540 hertz monitor that was shown at CES.
Don't do that.
Why?
Don't do that. You don't need to be editing.
I have questions.
Excel spreadsheets at 500 hertz. Listen, you can get CSGO to get to 500 hertz. Will you feel it? Will Shroud feel it? Yes. Will you feel it? No.
I would argue, I don't know if even Shroud would feel it. That feels like it's too excessive.
I don't know. I watched a really good video with Shroud where he was like playing on 120 hertz, 240 hertz, and 360 hertz monitors, and his reflex times were definitely, you could tell there was a difference between all of them. But like, he's Shroud. He's at like the highest level of that sort of thing. Will most people feel it?
But I feel like 360 you know, anything higher than that is sort of like the returns are diminishing.
They're diminishing for sure, because also you remember that refresh rate is not, well, refresh rate is a linear scale, but the response time is not linear. So like 60 hertz is 33 milliseconds, 120 hertz is 15 milliseconds, 240 hertz is now 7. So the difference between 240 and 120 is only 7 milliseconds, whereas the difference between 120 and 60 is 15. Yeah. So it just starts exponentially getting smaller and smaller. So probably the difference between 500 and 360 is probably like 2 milliseconds. Like, are you going to feel that? That's debatable to me. Like
that said, I will say I'm a frame snob now. If my PC for whatever reason defaults to 60, I'm like, ooh.
How dare you?
Jesus. Why is my mouse cursor so laggy? Like,
it's weird how it takes a while for your eyes to adjust when you're flicking between. When you're going lower, it takes a while to adjust. When you're going higher, it's an immediate improvement. It's like, it's the same with games. Like if you've been playing a game in like a performance mode at 60 and then you switch to 30, you're immediately going to go, this is ass. But play that for an hour.
You're getting used to it,
your brain will just be like, oh, this is fine. This is actually quite smooth.
Yeah.
It's just, it's
yeah. just the, that it's immediate, the same thing.
No, the immediate change fucks with you. Yeah. It's the same thing with whenever people are advised to change their color profiles on TVs and monitors, which you should. like you should change it away from something that is like cool or neutral to like a warm, because that's more natural on the eyes. They immediately go, oh, this is so yellow. Like it's because you're comparing. Like,
yeah.
Look at it for half an hour, and go back to like a cool profile, and you'd be like, this is so blue. This actually looks wrong. Like whites don't look white, they look blue. And so yeah, change your monitors to a warm color profile. That's what I'm saying. And your TVs. Fucking
and your life. Adjust your life to
and your life. Yeah, that's how your eyes see. God damn it.
Nice. That is
I hope that helps with the monitor talk.
Love it. That is the only question we had this week. So we're
sick.
Done.
If you wanna ask us about monitors and get some rambling answer, you can also email us checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on social platforms at Checkpoint Chat.
All of the places.
Cool.
That's episode.
It's episode 211. Is it 211? Are you sure? You never corrected me at the start, so no, I just assumed.
I was
right.
Nodding. I was going,
Oh, were you nodding? Okay. Yeah. Yes. The last one I have on my PC is 210, so I guess we're right. Yeah.
Nice.
Cool.
I'm ready.
Yeah, that's episode 211. It feels good to be back. And
it is, yeah. Sorry for the delay.
Yeah, but we had things I needed to decompress after a trip away, and then Matty fucked off to Cape Town, so... Who's at fault?
I'm doing it again soon, so there might be another
exactly.
gap.
Exactly.
So yeah, apologies. But yeah, also legitimately between that and load shedding, like the year ahead's a bit unpredictable.
It's going to be rocky.
But we will always do our best to schedule in time to do this, because we do love doing it. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'd obviously appreciate all the support of everyone in understanding. I mean, most people listening will know exactly what we're talking about, but if you are not from South Africa and you do not understand what any of this means, just know that it is very, very difficult to record when there are big gaps on your availability of power every single day.
My final closing thought is I watched Only Murders in the Building over the
good show.
The break. Great show. But in season two, I laughed because in one episode, there's a blackout. And everyone's like, oh no, like what is happening? Like, oh, it's a blackout. It's like, oh my God, we deal with this all the time.
And they like had it for 2 hours and it was like the world is going like to end
chaos,
for them. It's like,
yeah.
Come on, man. Yeah, I know exactly which episode you're talking about.
I laughed.
Everyone's like down in the lobby, like shouting, like,
why do we have power? I'm like, guys.
Yeah, you only knew.
Yeah.
One day a rat will like chew through the main power line of New York, because that's how power works. There's only one line.
It's only
one point of failure.
Big old cable.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Poor rat, but it will teach them.
A hard lesson.
Thank you so much for listening to Checkpoint Chat. We will see you next week. Have a great week.
Mm-hmm.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.